With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Wine Soundtrack USA. Listen to the passion with which producers narrate their winery and their world. In 30 Answers, discover their stories, personalities, and passions.
Hello, friends and listeners of Wine Soundtrack. This is Allison Levine, and today I'm sitting in the tasting room of Jeremy Wine Company with Jeremy Tredovic in Lodi, California. Jeremy, welcome, and tell us about Jeremy Wine Co.
No, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for hosting me on it. You know, Jeremy Wine Company started back in 2010, was our first year operating, but I actually started in the wine business way, way earlier than that, in 1994. So 94, there wasn't a lot going on as far as tourism in Lodi, and I went to work for Sebastiani, who had a big production facility here in town, and mostly worked in the cellar. And after about 3 years, I picked up an opportunity to go to work for Nico Winery. And Nico was a new custom crush facility in the area. And that was definitely something that hadn't been happening for Lodi. So now we started to call these new little wineries and we were doing production for them. And that's where the real curiosity for the industry kicked in for me, is working with those small guys. And after about 4 years working there, I decided to make a move again. I went to Michael and David Winery and I worked for them doing sales and marketing for a couple of years. And just found that I wanted to be self-employed and started looking at ways I could express my creativity. And so we started a small company called Vision Etching that was a large format wine bottle. So by large format, they were 3 liter up to 27 liter bottles, really big stuff. And then we'd sandblast labels into them, hand paint them, airbrush them, and then sell them out in auctions. I did that for about 2 years and quickly got bored again and sold it to an employee. And then we started a design studio. A friend of mine was a really brilliant illustrator, and so we started designing wine labels. And for the next 10 years, I did wine labels and websites and packaging. And by the time we were getting towards the end of that, I was just getting bored and fat and tired of sitting in front of the computer. And so I really relished going back out to the vineyards and being able to work with grapes. It's just such a more fulfilling experience to be able to take something tactile. You know, you pick up that wad of fruit, that bin, and you move it to the other bin, you ferment it, and right there in front of you, you can see that activity and the aromatics of it. And then you put it in barrel. And then when the product's done, I get to stand behind a bar and stand in front of you, that customer, and show you this product that I've been touching over the time. And it's just very fulfilling for us.
That's really cool. So getting into the vineyard, are you purchasing fruit? Do you have your own vineyards? What's the combination of that?
So with everything in this business, each facet of it is a career to learn the full ins and outs of it. And growing wine grapes is no different. It is a entire career. Every year you get one opportunity to see what weather's doing, to adjust your farming styles to meet that. And so for me, I didn't spend that much time out growing grapes. We bought our first vineyard about 3 years ago, and I'm still using a consulting farmer out there to help me kind of read the room. We get a great vibe. I've worked with vineyards many times over the years, so I understand the life cycles of them. But man, that is a full career into itself. And so we're just touching into that. But I do work with so many cool, passionate growers here in the region.
So you're sourcing a lot of fruit to make your wines. What's your total case production and what types of wines are you making?
So our total production is about 6,000 cases, and we started out really focused on kind of two varieties were my key focuses, three. One was Tempranillo, Albarino, and Sangiovese. Those were kind of my three whimsy muses, but then we quickly realized that people coming to Lodi, they want Zinfandel. And so we expanded to really looking at Zinfandels. And honestly, Zinfandel has become probably one of my favorite wines to make out of this region. They are just so distinctly different. We have so much character and we have so much access to these really cool old vines out in the area. So
a real eclectic mix, because I know you make something like 20 different wines, if I counted correctly. And in general, where are your vines available? Are they direct to consumer? Are they available across the U.S.?
We're just starting to expand in California a little bit more in the wholesale market, but for the most part, I mean, 95% is always repeated, but that's probably about how many of our wines go direct to consumer. And they go out through most of the states. We have wine club members across the country. Missouri has one little bit of distribution for us, and then a couple overseas. You can oddly find us in Hamburg and other places, but yeah, you can't find us someplace in California.
But you're in Germany. So you grew up in this area. What is your first memory relevant to wine?
Oh man, I don't even know if I should tell this. My first memory is getting spanked by my parents because I had found a grape steak out in a vineyard, and I proceeded to do what most 3 or 4 year old kids would do with a steak, go out and whip weeds, and I happened to start whipping grapes off a grapevine.
Oh, no.
So that's probably my first memory, is getting in a lot of trouble for playing baseball with the grape clusters. but
okay, so then, obviously you've been able to drink a lot of great wine, both locally and maybe abroad, I'm not sure. But what is one of those aha moments? Was there a particular wine where you just said aha, and it either set you on a path or in the direction of a variety or just making wine?
You know, there really wasn't a single aha, but there was a time of tuning my palate. And I look at wine as like some people look at sports or golf, where you can say it's a never-ending journey. I think that one of the wines that was key to me was there was a changeover at Woodbridge, Robert Mondavi, when they sold the company to Constellation. They had a lot of excess inventory for the La Familia brand. And so they closed out a lot of their Barbera and Sangiovese, and I came home, and at that point in time, we didn't have a ton of money, and we were drinking those wines for probably a year, and man, they were just really, really signature to me as those moments of, like, these kind of shaped where I wanted to go with our wines.
Yeah, you saw all that potential.
Yeah.
So if we were to come into your home, into your private wine cellar, it might be under your, like, in a closet, I don't know how much, but what would we find in there?
A lot of old Jeremy wines and not much else. I have a really, really strong opinion about wine. And this is unlike every other winemaker out there. But, in the wine business, this is the only product that we're asking, and this is particularly relevant to Lodi, because this is the only place that we're asking consumers to spend their money and then take it home and stick it under their bed. You know, you don't go to the store and you don't buy a pound of butter and say, ooh, this is going to be amazing butter in 10 months from now. You go home and you use it. And I think that part of the way that we interact with wine has left it a little bit elite and not accessible to that consumer that may not have access to wine culture or that time. And it should be. Like, there's no reason, especially in Lodi. These wines are pleasant, they're plush, the tans are ripe, it's ready. Why skimp? Why not enjoy it? Have a great experience with that bottle of wine. Go home and drink it, and then go back and have another one and be able to enjoy that over time.
So you take that same philosophy and just don't have a lot of wine at home?
I think wine is for drinking.
So is there a particular bottle you have opened recently and drank that you were really excited by?
Oh.
It doesn't have to be your wine. It could be another wine.
Actually, there was. My wife and I were out on a short vacation.
I'll ask it again. That's a long train.
They're really long. They go a little bit. That's the beauty of downtown.
As long as it doesn't whistle again, we're okay.
Yeah, no, it won't.
Okay.
Just be noisy.
You can just start with your answer.
So actually, yeah, my wife and I were out on a short vacation, and I had a glass of a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, and it's not something that's attainable here in Lodi, but it reminded me of some of the really beautiful complexity of wines outside the region. There is a danger for sure. When we're making our own wines over and over, we're consuming from our region. And I don't think it's a bad thing, but definitely it's something that we always are reminding ourselves to buy other wines outside of our area and taste more. I am not a wine follower. I couldn't tell you the key brands that are out there. I really am just looking at got my wines. And within our region, I drink some of our other Lodi area wines too, but I love what we're making.
So do you think there's a such thing as a perfect variety?
Whoa, I think there's a regionally perfect variety.
So in
Lodi, it's Zinfandel, but there's also a caveat in this. And one of the beautiful things that we have as a region is a broad flexibility in what varietals grow here. And so we're able to experiment to a level that some of the other regions really are not able to. And that's been a very fun thing because some of these wine varieties, I don't know, the last count was like 100 plus that they grow in this region.
Wow.
And so it gives me a ton of scattered flexibility to make, try.
To achieve perfection or something close.
Yeah, or just scratch the itch.
And what is your opinion on wine critics and scores?
So I think they have a place, and this is partially led by people trying to quantify what they can't quantify. Like, you need that guidance from a critic scoring wines so that they can help you make buying decisions. And it's overwhelming when you go into a store and there's 200 wines in there. So they do have a place. I really feel like wine has not been made to be accessible to a broad spectrum of our society. And I think that's something we've built in and built on these old traditions of process and procedure and pomp and circumstance that go with a bottle of wine. And it's made it not easy to access. If you didn't have a friend, a family member that has introduced you to the culture of wine to say, like, this is how you pick out a bottle, this is how you pronounce a varietal name, it makes it very intimidating to actually enter it. And we're doing ourselves a disservice as an industry by keeping it that way. Everybody has an excellent palate. Every single person has an excellent palate. You don't have to be able to tell me that there is cassis on the nose or that you're smelling toast. You don't have to articulate those. You can just taste it and say, I don't like this, or I do like this. That's an excellent palate. You just know your own.
That's true. So let's talk about your own. Red, white, or rosé?
Oh man, depends on the time of day and when. I'm a red wine drinker, primarily.
Okay.
Primarily.
Still or sparkling?
Oh, still. Sparkling goes down a little too easy for me.
So you have a very, natural, no pretension approach to wine and drinking wine. How do you approach food and wine pairing? Do you think there are rules to follow, like red wines with meat, white wines with fish? Do you not care at all? How do you pair food and wine? Because you did say you cook, so.
I cook a ton, and typically what I'll pair it with is what's open on the counter. I do believe there are very beautiful and brilliant pairings, and I've had many of those that are very well thought out. I think that you can go in a very simplistic approach to it, though. If your food has a lot of intensity, a lot of flavor, and it's dark, like a pasta sauce, I probably would choose a red wine, or I'd choose something that's like a rosé. But you have to have something that goes strong against strong. As you move into the lighter wines, white wines, rosés, those are more into softer flavor profiles, things where you want to punch that acidity, like I talked about Niçoise salad. That's one of our favorite lunch items. Those, and then also you can go into that little bit of sweetness, works really well with spicy. And pretty much everything we're eating nowadays is some version of spicy or Asian or Mexican influence to the foods. And so a lot of those work really well with a tiny touch of sugar and a little bit of like good strong acidity in a wine.
Absolutely. So for somebody who hasn't tasted your wine yet, what do you think they're missing out on?
They're missing out on very approachable, complex, layered wines. And there are many thousands of wineries, and it really is to you, that customer, the consumer, to taste through those wines and find those palates that sync up. When you're tasting my wine, you're tasting an expression of my palate. It's my perception of acid, sugar, fruit. There's lots of wines on the market that are very lean and low in oak, and that's that winemaker's perception of what they want in that glass, that expression of it. And for me, I think oak is a critical component. I love those vanillin characters that are in there. Everything has to be balanced. It's like food. You've got to have the right balance of acid, sweet, tannin, all those things. It should be, every wine should be this linear experience that finishes smooth on the entry, and it just lingers on the palate, and it finishes not in squares, but in circles, soft, elegant, smooth.
Yeah. That's a visual that I can really get. As I'm sipping your wine, I'm seeing circles. So If space aliens were to land here on your property right now in your lovely backyard tasting area, which of your wines would you want to welcome them with?
Ooh, man, that's a tough question. Wow, do they have mouths?
You don't care how they drink the wine.
I probably would welcome them with some rosé, and if they didn't like the rosés, I would definitely. Like, my favorite right now is the winemaker's blend. I'm biased, but it's
and the winemaker's blend is?
Tempranillo, a little bit of Zinfandel, a little bit of Cabernet, a little bit of Petit Verdot. It's just a plush, big expression of this intense fruit. It's just a really gorgeous wine. Mm. Our red blends are kind of like, red blend is where I have complete freedom to just kind of tinker and flow out a wine however I see fit for it. So,
they get a nice wine. So you're working with a lot of different vineyards and you've been in this area for a long time. And we know that, you know, California has a level of consistency when it comes vintage to vintage.
Yes.
How much variation do you see year to year? Do you think it's just is it a big difference or a small difference?
It's a big difference. And this is a big factor for all of us in agriculture over the coming years, because these drought years generally kind of flatten out the curves of distinction not between varieties, you still get varietal distinction, but they start to take away some of the control that we as growers or vintners have on those pick points. You can have these very fast rampings of sugar following a heat wave, and that can kind of force your hand where you're no longer kind of waiting for that phenolic or complex aromatic ripeness on grapes. You're really having to just chase down that sugar ripeness because they're starting to shrivel on the vine, and you just have to pick even though you're not quite getting that subtlety out of them. What I found is those wines, while very popular, they are big, massive, extracted. You're starting to flatline some of the aromatic differences that you'd find with wine. So maybe you would have, if you could perfectly pick that Zinfandel in the zone that you wanted to pick it at, you would get more floral elements in there, and you would get some, you know, brighter, like blueberry, like high notes to it. During these drought years, you start to compress all those aromatics down into prune, plum, raisin, and those can find their ways across varietal differences. So you can have these very high alcohol, big extracted, the tannins are really soft, they're very drinkable wines, but you lose some of that aromatic complexity.
So it may not be a variation within each year, but it's this kind of drought years versus non-drought years, which we tend to have a lot of drought years here.
Yeah, I know, it sucks.
So do you have any good luck rituals you do at the beginning of harvest to get started?
I am not a...
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
A person that has a lucky penny and no superstitions. You know, I just kind of take things as they roll in and go with it.
I don't shave for, you know, until harvest is over, or I don't change socks, or
I've tried them. I just can't get in the groove. You know, this is not a sprint for me. You know, this is going to be my 17th harvest or 18th. And you only get, like, I don't know, 40 harvests in your lifetime, maybe, if you're right. And every year it's a whole new thing. So we do a ton of pre-gaming. And it's one of the things we spend a lot of time on internally, is meeting and looking at what's coming, and then adjusting some of our winemaking plans based on what's happening. So there's not a lot of chance in what we're doing. We try to level the playing field.
Well, on that note, you're spending time in the vineyard. Are there any signs or predictors that tell you what a harvest is going to be like?
There are some. We can see some of that shaping up at veraison, especially once you're past veraison. those big heat waves that have a big impact on us, those are really hard to anticipate and do much with. Our good growers, they're able to kind of get more water out in the fields, anticipating that that heat spike is coming, and the vines are able to kind of bridge that gap. There's some really cool things that I was described from an old grower. He told me, like, you can watch the tendrils on the vine, and as long as the tendrils are out in front of the or the small leaves are out in front of the tendrils, then there's plenty of water out there. And when the tendrils get out past them, then there's it needs water.
I've heard that as well.
And there's tons of those little things that the older growers will tell you out in the fields, which is cool. These are like, when you go out in an old vine Zin field in Lodi, these are living history. When you walk in there, this is something, if any of you are ever out in a vineyard, every year the vines are pruned, and each year that leaves a scar on the vine. And so when you look at those old vines and you see those gnarled holes on the bottom of that vine, you're really looking at somebody's pruning scar from 1920 or 1930. And it's like looking at the rings on a tree. You can start to count up from the bottom and see this living history in front of you. It's really very awe-inspiring when you're out there, and it brings like this kind of connection to an old world.
I mean, looking at old vines, I'm in awe, but I've never really thought of it that way, and that's a really fascinating way to think. It's a very true way. So I know that you are working with a lot of growers and purchasing fruit, but now you have your own vineyard that you're, you know, new to, and it's a couple years to get into. Do you tend to walk through the vineyard and talk to your vines? And if so, what do you say to them?
Please grow good fruit. Please. Don't. No, I don't typically talk to them, but that's one of our great meeting times. This is the, like, harvest is hard. Like, leading up to harvest, there's two approaches. Some winemakers get really jazzed and they're pumped up leading into it. The more that I go through, the more when August starts rolling around, I'm really excited. It's like game time. You're getting fired up for this coming beast. But it's also a little bit sad because you know that it's the end of your freedom for that year. Like from August on until maybe, you know, in November is sales season. So there's just like your year ends in August. There's nothing more beyond it. But those times when you're able to walk out there, Marie and my assistant winemaker and I will go out and we walk the vines, and it's walking and talking and absorbing what's around you and looking for those vines that might be struggling. And sometimes you just have these aha moments when you're out there that are really, it's very fun.
So your vines are telepathically talking to you.
They are talking. You know what? The secret, the funnest thing in the old vines in fields around here is, and these are always the winemaker's vines that are out there. You'll be wandering the old field and you'll come across an old Tokay vine that's out there. And there's usually one or two that are left in these old vine fields. But those are the eating grapes because they're riper a little sooner than the Zin. And so those are the ones that we know where they're at, and we'll walk out to those ones, munch on some Tokays while we're out. And it's just kind of a fun little treat.
I love it. So when you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Ooh, man, that's a...
Maybe post-superhero phase.
Post-superhero. Always wanted to be a superhero. I really did want to go into acting, and I wanted to be a chiropractor for a while, and then here you are in the wine business. I can tell you, I did not want to go into the wine business. My mom was constantly complaining about my dad. She was a harvest widow, so my dad worked inside Mondavi for many years, and so he was gone from August until November, and she would always complain about him. So the wine business was like the last thing I was going into, but here I am. So.
I know that August ends your year and then you're working, but when you do have free time, how do you spend it?
Lots of hiking. We love to, my wife and I will go up into the mountains. We like to disappear out on some of those trails. Some skiing, mountain biking. I'm just generally trying to be active. I want to live as long as I can and drink as much wine as I can. That ties into exercise as much as you can too. So.
And for a romantic evening, what sort of wines entail, you know, what sets the mood and what carries you through a romantic evening?
You know, definitely a special bottle of wine, like picking out that one that's been sitting for a little bit, or it's something that, this is actually what we do quite often, is when we travel, we always try to go into wine regions when we're traveling, and we'll take those bottles home, and those are that little time capsule of that moment. And that's where I do deviate back to saying there are times when you can save bottles of wine and they represent something. It's that moment that you remember sitting and talking to that person, or it's that break away from that long vacation trip that you had. And that's always a good romantic start.
So there might be something under your bed.
there are a few bottles down there.
So from what countries?
No. They're domestic. There was a point, there was this tipping point for me in our cellar where I had, I think, 350 or 60 bottles down there. And I realized that I would never be able to drink them all. And so that was the point where they started to get old. I was like, all right, I'm giving all these away and I'm not collecting mine anymore. We're just going to drink one. But yes, there is something to that.
So when you look back at your life, is there a particular piece of advice you were given or a mantra you live by? And if so, what is it in... Who's the person who gave it to you, if you remember?
There are a few winemakers. It really has been a lot of impact from a lot of people, not singularly one. There are all the people that are in the wine business that would take a few moments to share the why behind what they're asking you to do, and that would listen to stupid kid questions and, also give me some grace on dumb decision making and other things like that. But I think patience is probably the best thing. And if I was looking back over my career, I would definitely tell myself, be patient, things happen, it takes time, just keep going.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20. Yes. And if you could give our listeners a piece of advice, what might you tell them?
If it relates to the wine business, it takes a lot of time to learn this. It seems like a simple thing, but you gotta love it. It's not a game for money that you go into. This is something that you do for a lifestyle. It will demand a lot of your life, but it's also very rewarding.
So when you look back at your career, any aspect of your career, what would you say is one of your proudest achievements to date?
it's really surviving to this point. to get this off the ground. When we started it, we were so broke. I mean, this was a Craigslist winery that we built, basically. I would track down pieces of equipment all over the state and I would drive for it. Our budget was $1,500 in cash and a $15,000 line of credit. Most of the wine business is not bootstrap winemaking startup. Most of it is second career type. You come into this and you've been successful in something and this is a nice trophy or a showpiece for you. To do this in the bootstrap method, the nature of wine is in Lodi, where we actually have faster to market wines, it really takes about 2 to 2.5 years for every dollar we spend to circle back into our account again with some profit on it. So you're talking about years of front loading capital back into the operation to grow. So our first production, 8 barrels, we're at a total of almost 800 barrels right now. So it's been a massive growth, but it is very cash intensive to get it off the ground. And I don't think I recognized quite how big of a challenge. Thank God I didn't, because I probably wouldn't have done it.
But you have an ongoing achievement, so.
Yes, yeah, it sticks with me.
So complete this sentence for me. A table without wine is like?
Ooh, a table without food. You need both of those, yeah. One of the coolest things about wine, the coolest thing about it is that it wraps around a whole lot. Wine is fermentation, it's a living beverage. And everything that we eat that is delicious and fun is linked back to fermentation. You can do sourdough breads, obviously. I've been baking for 20 years. It's just a passion that I cannot get enough of and I can't master it. But chocolate's fermented. You look at pickles are fermented. And these are like, it's like God's little gift. He gives you this fruit and it's already wrapped in yeast. All you have to do when you get everything right is just hold on to it and coddle it along. Everything else has been done for you. It will create itself into this amazing beverage.
I love it. So I want you to imagine the situation. We're sitting at a table here. We have your bottle of wine in front of us. Paparazzi are pretty excited because of someone sitting with us from any walk of life, living or deceased, celebrity or non-celebrity. Who would you want to be drinking your wine?
Ooh, wow. That's a deep, hard question. This is very cliche, but I probably would be very excited if I had Robert Mondavi at the table, because he has had such an impact on my family's life. And he was always somebody in the background. Like, my dad would come home from work and he would say, how much Robert would come through the winery and talk and engage with all of the employees there. And he kept a personal contact with the whole company during his time. And that was something that was very different that didn't exist once it became a more corporate entity. And it's something that I've carried. Even when I worked at Sebastiani, I remember Don coming through and passing out $100 bills in a little envelope. And you know, at that point in time, I'm a temporary seller worker, but it's that moment of being like respected and know that you're more than just a cog in the whole thing. So yeah, I would love to say thank you for laying the groundwork for our industry.
Oh, that's beautiful. So if you were going to a deserted island, what three wines would you take with you? We're almost finished here.
Can it be a tanker truck?
Sure. What three tanks of wine would you take?
I would probably take I would definitely take a rosé. I might take two bottles of rosé and a really nice red blend. That would probably be my choice.
Okay. So we're almost finished, and just to end this correctly, we play a little game of pairing wine and music. Oh. So since you are a big fan of your own wines, as you should be, you can give me a genre, you can give me a particular song, you can give me an artist. But when I arrived, I was given a little glass of your sparkling Grenache, a classic method sparkling wine. And what does that make you think of?
It would be classic jazz. That is kind of my go-to genre. So to me, wine and jazz kind of link together in this like free form, harmonious, kind of beautiful dance. So that's probably what I would choose.
And then I tried your rosé, your dry rosé. It was a rosé of Syrah.
Correct, from our vineyard, which yields about 3 tenths the acre. It's a really expensive rosé to make, but it's very cool when it's done.
And what kind of music does that conjure?
Oh man, I am so not a musician. Like I am terrible with music, but again, if you came to my house or were listening to what I do, it's a lot of jazz. It kind of puts my brain in a space where I can think creatively and it doesn't impede and it complements thought. Same thing with wine when you're having it, just flows in the background.
So I'm gonna do two more wines if you're gonna do jazz. One is, no, I had your cool white wine that you said was a mistake. It ended up being Albarino and Orange Muscat, right?
Yes. So that one's Blue Bonnet. And that's named after the home state of our assistant winemaker, Marie Taylor, and she's out of Texas. And so it's the middle of harvest. Here's what happens. During harvest, it's a busy, chaotic time. And we had this one tank. And what we try to do with our white wines, especially if they're a little bit sweet, which is the Orange Muscat, we shoot for what's called an arrested fermentation. Arrested fermentation is where you chill the tank down and you start tracking hourly the remaining sugar that's left in the tank. And when we get down to that target zone, we're tasting it. We'll cold crash it, very cold. We hit it with bentonite and then we filter it off so that we can leave whatever existing sugar is left in that tank from the grapes. So we did that. Sterile filter, there shouldn't be any yeast left in the tank. And so we decide that we need that tank for another white wine. We rotate that out into totes. It's just going to be for a couple days.
You're really avoiding pairing that with music, aren't you?
Sorry, yes. Anyway, I'm totally rabbit trailing. But the long story short is we ended up blending that back together with some Albarino that wasn't meant to blend with it. And it made this beautiful, really crispy, aromatic wine.
It was a beautiful wine. And okay, so it's named after her home state, Texas. And in harvest, do you listen to music? I mean, what?
Oh yeah, we actually listen to an online station, Radio Paradise, inside the place. That's pretty much the whole thing. I'm sorry, I rabbit trailed.
That's okay. I won't push you without this anymore. I will ask you one more question. No more music, I promise. Here's my last question.
80s music, too. I'm good at that.
Oh, well, see?
All right.
80s is the only thing I know, too. So, okay. Well, I was going to ask you one more for your red wine, your hand-picked Grenache that I absolutely loved.
Yes. I am fresh out of any more music options for that, but that wine is really fantastic.
So. Okay, I won't make you do music. But I will ask you, we all, you know, love to travel, and you had mentioned that you and your wife will travel. What is one place that's at the top of your bucket list that you want to hit next? Where do you want to explore?
It's Paris, right? Because I didn't...
Wine region.
Oh, wine region. Okay, so it would still be somewhere.
I do want to go to the Caribbean, but...
we've gone a lot to the Caribbean. That's a great place. Yeah, probably it would be. The other one that's on my list, too, is like Argentina. It's somewhere I would love to go to. It's my wife's vegetarian. It's a very meat-centric diet, so I don't know if that will happen, but...
But good Malbec.
Yeah, right. Malbec, we made one last year, too. So amazing. There's some really, really amazing vineyards around here.
Very cool. Well, while you're trying to figure out if you're going to Paris or Argentina, if somebody wanted to come here, how can they visit you here at Jeremy Wine Co.?
Jeremy Wine Co., our downtown tasting room, is open 7 days a week from noon until 5, and our staff is fantastic. We have a rotation of wines that we're constantly moving through on our list. You can find us online at our website, jeremywineco.com. Give us a call. Check us out. We're located in downtown Lodi at 6 West Pine Street. And a lot of people walk into our front tasting room and never see that we've got a back patio in the back. So make sure you walk past the bar.
Yeah, beautiful back patio, outdoors, right in the heart of downtown Lodi, a charming little town. So, Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us today on Wine Soundtrack, and cheers.
My pleasure. Cheers. Drink more wine.
Yes, here. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to a new episode of Wine Soundtrack USA. For details and updates, visit our website, winesoundtrack.com.